For decades, America has tried to combat the harms of drug use primarily through banning drugs and incarcerating people who use them. But this has caused a violent underground market for drugs, increasing crime in our communities. It's caused contaminated substances, increasing overdose deaths, and it's caused incarceration to skyrocket, destabilizing families. What we're doing isn't working. Crime, death, and broken families are the collateral damage of using the criminal justice system to address the public health issue of drugs. If you're looking for a better path forward, you're in the right place. What if we changed our drug policies to prioritize life, health, harm reduction, and thriving? And what if it benefited all of us? Our criminal justice approach to drugs had a beginning, and it can have an end. Join us on the journey to end it for good. I'm Christina Dent, your host, and if you're new here, End It For Good is a nonprofit started in 2019 based in Mississippi that invites people to support approaches to drugs that prioritize life and the opportunity to thrive. This podcast is one of the ways we do that. You can head over to episode 34 to hear my story as a conservative Christian foster mom changing my own mind on the best path forward with drugs, and then come on back and dive in deeper. I didn't change my mind overnight, and most other people don't either. We all need time to learn, think, ask questions, and explore. Whatever your perspective is, I'm glad you're here. Let's journey together. Welcome back to the End It For Good podcast. I'm Christina Dent, your host. So excited today to have Joanne Shedd with us. You've heard Joanne's story from my perspective because it's such a big part of my story in the beginning of End It For Good, but today you're going to hear it from her perspective. So I'm not going to take up time. I want you to hear Joanne because she is such a powerhouse and a wonderful person, and I'm so thankful for her and for so many different reasons. But welcome, Joanne. We're super excited you're here.
Thank you, Christina. It's always an honor to be with you.
So tell us a little bit about what you're doing now, because most of the time people don't get to hear. What is your life like today? What are you involved in? What are you excited about that's on your horizon?
My life is full of so much purpose and joy, and staying very busy with Beckham now being 8 years old. He keeps me on my toes. But I also now work at Fairland Treatment Facility, the treatment facility that I went to 8 years ago. I also am the case manager and peer support for the 11th District Intervention Court in Cahoma, Bolivar, Quitman, and Tunica County. And then I'm also the Celebrate Recovery Ministry Leader at my church, Clarksdale Baptist. And recently, I have started a nonprofit ministry, Psalms 51 Ministry, and it is where we are just helping women that are getting on their feet that might need a little extra help and support in the community. And it's been kind of slow rolling, but that is kind of what's on the horizon that I know God's going to do great things in for the future.
So you've got your hand in a lot of different places. You've got a lot going on.
I do. And school.
Oh, I love it. What are you in school for?
Social work. I'm about to have my associates, and then I'm hoping to go to Delta State and get my bachelor's in social work and my master's in counseling.
That's awesome. So excited for you. So everybody's pathway out of addiction is a different journey. It's their own unique journey. Some people have a lot of relapses along the way. You've now been in recovery for over 8 years. So what for you was a turning point? Most of the time when I'm telling our story, I'm talking about how you changed me. Tell us about your own journey. What for you helped you on that path towards sobriety after many years of using, and yet you've been able to find that long-term path?
So it's really interesting and neat how God opens up different areas of my, just it reminded me of different things. And through this journey with you and with the summit and different things, God has reminded me of so many different, things that brought me to recovery. And, y'all always hear about, oh, when Beckham was born, that's when everything changed. But, realistically, it went back, a year or two before that. I had gotten in a really, really dark spot. I was very Depressed, and I felt very hopeless. I felt like there was no hope for me. I felt like addiction was going to be the rest of my life. And so, you know, I went through a little period of my life where I was in and out of jail quite a bit. And so I was, you know, getting different charges. And when that happened, you know, I just remember in that time I was getting really, really just tired. I remember one of the last times I was in Madison County Detention Center, I was just so tired. And I, you know, and I remember praying to God in there to help me find a way out. And, you know, and it was very short after that time that I got out that I became pregnant with Beckham. And, you know, and Beckham was kind of like the icing on the cake of what God had already been doing and how he had already been shifting and changing and manipulating and doing different things within my heart. And so when Beckham was born, it was just a breath of fresh air because I knew at that moment that there was a different way of life. And when I, you know, got caught with my CPS with Beckham, it was just really neat because it was not, I mean, yes, I was sad and I was very, you know, I did not want to be away from my son, but then also there was a sense of relief that came on me at during that time also, because I knew that I was about to get some help. I knew that it was either going to be live life without my son or me do something different. And that's just kind of what it was. So it was really a multiple things that God did in my life to bring me to that point.
I think that's helpful too for people to hear that, you know, it's often not a moment for people. It's like, as with most things in our lives, you know, it's kind of this journey of change. Some of those journeys are shorter, some of them are longer. You know, when we've talked before, it's even, you know, you can kind of think back to these different pivotal moments where something shifted, and yet it wasn't that, you know, one day everything was one way and then immediately everything was another way and it was all better and it was all, you know, totally new perspective. It was lots of these things shifting and changing and getting to a place where you could make that switch over into a life of sobriety. So what are some of the things that you've learned as you've reflected, like you were talking about, because you spoke at our summit, our big conference that was just a couple of months ago. What are some of the things that you have learned over these last 8 years as you have reflected on your own pathway to recovery?
Well, first, I have learned to be honest, to be uncomfortably honest about everything when you are in a tough spot, when you see something that may hinder your recovery, or not even just hinder your recovery, but hinder your peace of mind. I've learned to reach out. I've learned to rely on other people around me. I've also learned how important that community and church is. You know, for so many years, I didn't grasp that. But now that I've, you know, that I'm in the middle of being surrounded by so many amazing people, I see how important it is to have that support system around you. You know, to be there if you think about falling, or, you know, to be there to catch you before you fall sometimes. So.
Yep. Yeah. That's a big theme of what a lot of people have been talking about on the podcast, is just the importance of community and support, not going it alone, not trying to kind of white knuckle your way through life, but really building that network of support.
Right.
Hey friends, this podcast is just a part of the work we do at End It For Good, inviting more people to this conversation on changing the way we approach drugs and addiction. We want strong families, safe communities, and policies that uphold the dignity and value of every single human life. If you're not signed up for our monthly newsletter yet, head on over to enditforgood.com, scroll to the bottom of the page, and sign up. You'll get all the info on the rest of the work that we do, including live events, and it'll get you plugged in to the End It For Good movement.
So what do you love most about your life today? You share a little bit of that in my book, Curious, which you so graciously shared lots of hours of interview with me about your life before I knew you and your life after I knew you for that period of time where Beckham was with us. What are some of the things that you love most about your life in recovery?
there are so many things about my life and recovery I love today. Obviously, I love being the mother to Beckham Suede. He is absolutely the most, just biggest gift that I have ever received. And, you know, just as we were talking earlier about, before the podcast about the, you know, snowstorm we had a couple of weeks ago, during that time, I was just able to soak him in and, you know, and just remember how thankful I am for him and how being his mother is an honor, and that I get to be a mother, a present mother. It's not that I'm just here with him, you know, but that I actually get to spend time with him and mold his little life and change his little life and help him grow into the little godly man that I want him to be. And also, you know, what else I love about recovery is I love that I do not take it lightly that I get to work in the place that helped give me my life back. So many times I've said this, that I almost hate sometimes calling it my job or work, because it doesn't feel like that. Every day I get to go and talk to these women and love on these babies and just get to be a part of these women's life, you know, as they're, you know, going into recovery and learning something different. And, you know, and I know that, you know, the statistics aren't very great for people that come into treatment, but, you know, I know that I plant those seeds in different women's life and that God uses me as a vessel to be able to tell them, you know, different things. And I pray that, you know, something that I say or that I can do can help maybe even down the road, you know, if they go back out there and have a relapse, that maybe something I say can do, you know, or say that could, change their life down the road. So, but really just every aspect of my life is a joy. I, you know, love being a mother. I love my job. I love my community that I have around me, and that I don't have to live in the shadow anymore, that I get to live in freedom, and that I don't have to worry about if somebody wants to come to my house to hide stuff. I mean, it's just the small things like that that people don't think about. You know, over the Christmas holiday, I was able to host at my house for the first time, and it was just my mom that came up here, but I was able to invite two people from our church to come, and, you know, and it felt so good to be able to cook for them, to be able to afford the food to buy for them, and, you know, and to be able to host it and not worry about, you know, are they going to find something? Are they going to see something? Or, you know, just the small things like that today that I think, you know, I just don't take for granted. And I'm always thankful for those new things.
Yeah. I love that. And I love, you know, one of the things too that you had said that's in the book is about just being able to like fill your car up with gas. That was one of the things that just stuck with me. And I was thinking about that because I was actually filling my car up with gas last week. And I was next to somebody who, for whatever reason, they were talking like out loud about what they were putting in their car, and they were putting like $5 worth of gas in. It just brought me back to that. And I have no idea what's going on in their life. That may just be all that they have, and there may not be anything else that's going on behind that. But it brought me back to that memory of you talking about just that sort of very narrow, like planning. Everything was like just for the here and now, just surviving to the next minute, to the next hour, during active addiction, instead of being able to have that bandwidth, like mental bandwidth, planning bandwidth, financial bandwidth, and all of that kind of shrunk down to very small kind of survival proportions. And now just those little things like that I think are so beautiful that you can recognize and celebrate and just enjoy.
Yes, I agree.
So, what encouragement would you give to somebody who is listening, who is struggling with an addiction? Maybe they have been in recovery and relapsed and been in recovery and relapsed. And, you know, there's many people for whom that's a big part of their journey is not always being sober. How would you encourage them just on your own journey?
Well, do not, until you are dead, your story is continuing. And so just because you may have relapsed or just because you may have not found recovery yet, it's not the end of your story. And I think that people don't understand everybody's story is beautiful and unique. All the bumps and bruises and twists and turns. The journey is what's so beautiful about our lives, and that's where we learn, and that's where we gain new understanding and wisdom. And so, you know, if you are in a dark spot, you know, do not be hesitant to reach out. I know sometimes, I know for me, when I think about going to treatment or reaching out to somebody, that represented failure to me, that, you know, that I was failing at life and I was failing at what I was doing. And honestly, that just is when you're able to admit where you're at, then you can find a solution for whatever problem you're in. And if you keep it in, that's the only time that it's dangerous. As long as you are talking to someone and telling somebody about your problems, it doesn't really matter. But just don't think that, you know, that's the end. So,
And then another thing,
when we were talking a minute ago about, you know, how the shifting, I was talking about how the first couple of years of my life, I mean, the first few years before recovery, how I was, you know, things were turning. And, you know, so something I could say to families is, you know, I know sometimes it feels hopeless. I know it feels that your loved one or your person will never change. But remember, every ounce of love, every prayer, you know, as I always say, my sweet little mommy, she prayed for me so many years. And there is no doubt in my mind that her prayers is what helped me, you know, find recovery and find something new. So never feel like you know, that your prayers are going unanswered or that you're just wasting breath in you, because you're absolutely not.
Mm, love that. So tell us about the ministry that you've started. It's its own nonprofit. People can donate to it. I'd encourage them to do so. Psalm 51 Ministry, like PSALM, like Psalm in the Bible. Psalm Correct. 51 Ministry. Tell us what you are hoping to do through it.
Well, and I would like to say that if anyone would like to reach out to me, you know, by any kind of donations or see how you can help, you can email me at ministriespsalm51@gmail.com, and I can give you a little more information. But right now it's, you know, I'll go to a back up a little bit to, you know, working at Fairland, and, you know, we recently just started servicing women in our area, well, in the state of Mississippi. Previously, we were a women and men facility, but now we are just an all women facility with children, where we can actually service more women and children. Before, our you know, contact list, our wait list was a little bit longer, but now we're able to service more women and children, which is absolutely amazing. But I just started seeing a need a couple of, you know, really about a year ago. I've seen it since then, but before then, but really in the past year, since we've become an all women facility, I'm seeing that, you know, that these women, you know, they get out of treatment, but yet they still need some help. There's, you know, childcare vouchers, there's transportation is a big issue. And when they're coming out of treatment, you know, they need furniture, they need, you know, just different necessities that you would not really think about around your house. But when they get out, when they come out of treatment, sometimes they come out with literally nothing but clothes and, you know, a few baby items. And, you know, so they just need that assistance, helping different things. My biggest goal that we're working on right now is being able, I would love to find a donor or someone that would help with a storage unit, where when someone would like to donate some clothes or donate some furniture or something like that, I'd have an area to put it. Because right now it's kind of hard, because unless we have a girl that's moving out and needs it right in that moment, we don't really have anywhere to store anything. And another thing that I'm really working on is transportation, because a lot of these women, they get out of treatment and they want to find somewhere to, you know, stay, but then they've still got suspended license, or they don't have a vehicle. And these are all little things that takes a long time to get back in order, because, you know, they've been doing things for years, and so it just takes a long time. And so that's kind of what the ministry is just really being there, being that extra support, just kind of giving them an ear and being there. Whatever they may need, we want to be able to help them out in that area. And if we can't do it, we want to have the resources to, you know, help them. And so within the past year, there's been quite a few women that have decided to live here in the Delta, which is really amazing. And I love to see that because, you know, it's really helping the Delta too, because, you know, a lot of people just kind of write off the Delta and, you know, Clarksdale's not the best place, but I'm seeing these women with their children wanting to find a new way of life, just like myself. You know, most people ask me, why did you decide to move to the Delta to find a new way of life? But this is where my community and my support was. And so that's what these women are wanting to do. And so we are wanting to help them be that community and that support that they might need.
Mm, yeah. So this is, I want you to talk a little bit about your experience personally and just what you have seen. So Fairland is the treatment center that you went to and then you ended up working at, and now you are continuing to work at it. You've worked in a number of different capacities there over the last couple of years. So when I was there, when I brought Beckham back to you at Fairland, it was a women's and men's facility that also had the ability for people to bring their children with them. I think under the age of 5 could come to treatment with them. There was childcare during the day. I remember thinking that was completely nuts when you told me that there was this place you were going. I was like, what on earth? I have never heard of this before. This is before I learned anything about addiction or anything about what's really going on. And so in my mind, I'm thinking like, I don't know, having kids in here, this just seems like a terrible idea. And yet now I have thought, oh my goodness, I wish we had so many more opportunities like this. Because if you just think about the, which I know you know this, but in terms of if you've got a mother, let's say a single mom who needs help, who needs treatment for an addiction she's struggling with, what's she going to do? First of all, there's just this childcare issue. What are you going to do with your children while you leave for several months to go and get the help that you need? And also for mothers of young children, there is this bonding that we want to support. We don't want children to be separated from their parents for months at a time unless that can't be avoided. And so if there's no threat to the harm of the child, we want to support that. And places like Fairland offer that. There's very few of them in the state. And Mississippi is not unique in that. It is not something that's commonly done. It typically is that when you have treatment, just the person who's getting treatment is able to come. So what was your experience of that? As you know, my hope is that in 10, 15 years, we've got all sorts of places like this that are supporting the bonding and family structure and growth of a family. But tell us about your experience there yourself, and then as you have seen that play out over the years with other women.
Mm. It was, I was like you, because I was sitting in Baptist NICU when one of the nurses, and what was neat about this particular nurse, she was not a regular nurse in that unit, and she was not in there a lot, but she happened to come in there one night when I was there, and she said, well, have you thought about going to a facility that have children? And I was like, wait, there is that out there? And mm-hmm. I mean, I just remember, but I never even looked into treatment at all. So, you know, but
so this was right after Beckham was born. This he was in right the NICU for a couple of weeks.
Yes. And this was when I knew that I was going to have that I would have to go to treatment. We had already, you know, I already knew that, you know, I talked to the CPS worker and she told me that I was going to have to go by the assessment of Region 8 that I had actually already gone and done my assessment at. And so I knew that they were suggesting 30 days inpatient treatment. So I knew I was going to have to go to treatment. And I just was talking about it in the room that day. And I was like, I just wish if I could take my baby that I would be okay. I wouldn't mind going for however long they wanted me to go. And then that's when the nurse said, you know, well, have you thought about going to a facility with women and children? And at that time, of course, that was 8 years ago. There were only two facilities that allowed women and children. And that was Born Free, which is in Jackson. It was on Flag Chapel. It's recently moved to, been moved to Raymond now, but it was on Flag Chapel at the time, or there was Fairland. And I knew I did not need to stay in Jackson. I knew that that would not be the best environment for me, that, you know, where the area was, one of my dealers lived literally walking steps from the facility. And so I just knew that wouldn't be best for me. But my experience there was just absolutely amazing. I can't even really describe, you know, just the foundation it gave me. You know, I'm so, I was very blessed that they did not put Beckham in CPS custody until he was actually released from the hospital. So I was able to bond with him already, you know, up until the time that he was released. And so those few weeks away from him, part of my heart was not in my chest. And I mean, it was so painful to have him somewhere else, but I knew that this was part of our journey, even during that time, you know, and I mean, I was so scared about, you know, what family was he going to go live with? Where was he going to go and who was going to have him? And lo and behold, how God had all that orchestrated and played out, you know, but I mean, so when he got there, it was just almost like, you know, the beat to my heart was back with me when he got there that day, January the 8th of 2016 was the actual day that you and Mama brought him up there to me. And so when I had him up there then, I was, you know, I always babysat and, you know, had knew how to take care of kids, but I didn't know the what all it entailed to take care of a child. And so with me having him there, I was able to, we had a nurse on site. We had, you know, the nursery that we had someone in there that the lady who was over the nursery at the time, Mama Lou, she was just amazing. She helped me in every aspect that I, you know, needed. I mean, just as little as I was so scared to cut his fingernails. And so she'd cut his fingernails for me and she'd show me the best way to do that. And so just to be able to be a mom and not have to choose, it was a, you know, if there wouldn't be a facility like that, I would have to either have chose not be able to be his mom during that time or not be able to be his mom, but not be able to parent him during that time or go to treatment. And so I'm just so thankful that there was a place that allowed me to do both. You know, and like I say, I only had to stay there for 30 days, but then after he came, you know, things just started playing out where I wound up staying for transition. And then after that, it was just, I knew I needed to stay longer. So I wound up staying as a client for 10 months. You know, and then after that, I was, well, for 4 months. And then after that, I was able to actually have a job over the nursery and was able to continue my recovery. And so all during this time, I was able to go to my classes, learn more about recovery, work through some of my traumas, have people help me, you know, take care of my son, and then continue that bond. You know, Beckham will never not knowing his mama. He will always know having his mama. He does not remember those 4 weeks that he was away from me. And that in itself is such an honor because I've already caused pain on this little boy's life. And so at least from the time he was born on, I was able to make living amends and right the wrong that I had done to him while he was in my womb.
If you're listening, you're interested in solutions so that fewer people are harmed by drugs or addiction. Hop on our website and grab my new book, Curious, A Foster Mom's Discovery of an Unexpected Solution to Drugs and Addiction. It is a memoir of my learning journey on these issues. It starts when I'm 9 years old and continues through the founding and growth of Endo for Good. But it's really more than a memoir. It includes the stories of people like Michelle, who found a unique path to sobriety. And stories like James, who walked with his son through addiction and has incredible wisdom to share with other families. It's really more of a memoir on a mission to share my journey and the people that I've met along the way with you. There are better solutions. Grab a copy of Curious for yourself and maybe one for a friend. And let's grow a movement toward life, health, and hope.
That's a beautiful thing to think about, just the time that you had with him and were able to have with him because you could have him there with you and you weren't rushing to leave so that you could regain custody of him. You recognize, I need to spend some more time here. This is good for me. This is good for my recovery. And if he hadn't been in there with you, I know you would have been trying to get back to him as quickly as possible because That's he right. was your number one priority, even though you also wanted to be living in recovery. But, you know, and I think that's a big deal that you had the ability to stay when you recognized that you needed to stay because he was right there with you and you could continue to parent him. I think, you know, we've talked about this before of just how helpful it is as you're working on your recovery to have support around you as you're also parenting, because recovery on its own, even without
parenting is extremely challenging. Parenting a newborn is extremely challenging. Being a first-time mother is extremely challenging. And yeah. all of those things wrapped into one is really hard. And so having people around you that could help you navigate all of that at the same time and support you in that, where, you know, you're already under a lot of stress because you're trying to navigate this new way of life without substances. And you're trying to navigate this new way of life with a newborn who's waking you up in the middle of the night and all of that. There is a lot of challenging things there, and being able to have, being in that support system, that kind of incubator of support system to help walk along that with you. It's just a really beautiful thing, because I think that that's such a big piece of how we can help people be successful in their recovery. Not just can we send them to treatment somewhere, but can they be successful in their recovery?
Right.
I just love that.
And also, I'd like to add on that, Christina, if I can. I know you have a...
Yeah.
We might have CPS workers and judges and, you know, just different people working in that area with the youth courts and things. If you, you know, just like you said in the beginning, how you wondered that, you know, what, how is this going to play out, having the children there with the parents? It just looks like a big mess. You know, if you are in a place to help these women that their children are in CPS custody and they may currently be with the foster parent, or, you know, they're looking at placing their child somewhere, and if they're willing to go to treatment, do everything and you can in your power to allow them to go to a facility with their child. Because, you know, we are really blessed that there are a lot of, you know, CPS workers and judges that are on board with allowing the children to come with their parents in treatment, you know, or we wouldn't have, you know, so many children at one time. But we still find a lot of resistance in the CPS, you know, and judges, you know, that might, you know, play a part in this. And, you know, even as simple as if the judge is not going to allow the child to go to the treatment facility, if that mother has visitation with the child and, you know, it's up to you to drive 2 hours to visit with them for 1.5 hours or 2 hours, please do it. You know, I know that CPS is stretched so thin and have so many things, but any way you can help facilitate the mother and the child's bond while they are in treatment, please do so, because it is very, very important.
Yeah, I remember you telling me that for you, like every morning you would wake up and you would see Beckham next to you, and it was this motivator, this gas in the tank. I can do this another day. I'm doing this for him. And just that his physical presence there was such a big motivator for you.
Yes, it was. We were a team at that point. We were a team and we were going to tackle whatever came our way. So, yeah.
Love that. As we wrap up, anything else you'd like to share?
Just again, thank you for having me. And it's such an honor to be able to be here. And just, you know, thank you for telling our story. I don't take it lightly that there's, you know, you say that I helped you in so many areas, but I'm so thankful that you have allowed us to have a platform and that we are allowed to share our story and talk about different things. And even through this, the shifting of myself, you know, you've challenged my thoughts. And I believe that because of the way that you have challenged me, I am a better peer support and I am a better case manager, and that I am able to see outside the box a little bit, because I think sometimes we just get so narrow-minded that what we know or what we think is right is the only answer. And we have to remember that we don't have all the answers, and that, you know, it's so important to stay open-minded and willingness. And, you know, we tell any client that comes to Fairland, you've got to be open-minded and willing for something different. And that doesn't just go for addicts or for somebody with an issue going on. That goes for everybody. We have always got to be open-minded and willing for change, for us to revolve and to allow new things to happen in our life. So thank you for that.
Yep, absolutely. Well, thank you. I always feel this significant weight of just how much you have said over and over again over the years. You know, yes, you can tell our story. Yes, you can tell our story. And I don't take that lightly, because I think it's just such a vulnerable thing to do, to let somebody else tell part of your story. And so I appreciate that so much and have always wanted to honor you and Beckham in that story. And yet I know it is a very vulnerable thing. So I appreciate that from you. And I think it has given a lot of people hope and helped people to see things like what we're talking about today. Why could it be that it would be good for a child to rejoin their mother while they're in treatment? And maybe it is that we have misunderstood really the root causes of addiction. And that my work on that came entirely from your vulnerability with me, of letting me see who you really are, to really see your love for Beckham and to not hold me at arm's length in a way that I think would have been very easy to do and very justified to do. I mean, you know, it's a really tough situation. You've got a mother, and then you've got this foster mom who doesn't even know this child coming in. And, you know, it's this situation that can be so negative. And your response to that in letting me into your own heart and letting me into your relationship with Beckham was just really transformative for me. So thank you, my friend.
Thank you, my friend.
All right. Well, we will be back with another episode. In the meantime, think about what's one thing that you could do today that could bless someone, that could support someone. Go drop off some toilet paper at a local sober living house. Find a ministry that you can be involved in some way. Contact Joanne at the email address that she gave and see how Yes. you can be involved in helping women who are working hard to get back on their feet and to build a life for them and their children, and just need a hand up and a way to get started in that. So we'll see you next time on the End It For Good podcast. So how do we shift our drug policies from a criminal justice approach to a public health approach? By inviting one person at a time to change their mind. Changed minds are the catalyst to changed laws. But many people are only willing to have this conversation when they're invited to by someone that they trust. That's you. Invite your friends, coworkers, other people in your circle of influence to consider a better way. At End It For Good, our hope is that people who hear will become people who tell. Start a conversation and join the movement to end it for good.